Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
June 13, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. Damn, is my mic hot or not? I'm not sure. Anyway, I know that you found the show you were looking for, because you only find this show if you're looking for it, the O'Shelly Effect. So here we are, live at O'Shelly.com. You could be hearing us some other time, some other place. So no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, welcome. It is Monday, Moonday, the first broadcast day of the week for the O'Shelly Effect, but stay tuned, because that's not going to be the case much longer. We're going to change some things up on the network this week, and one of the biggest things is this will be the last live Monday show for a while. And I got two guys with me, and we're going to talk about why that's happening and exactly what's going to go on in that time slot in my life. funny, in my life. Yeah, in my life currently, and also it'll have something to do with my life. Anyways, I don't want to be too egotistical about it, but tonight actually is about my life story, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, but we're not going to tell any stories tonight, as I have done podcasts in the past. The most memorable, according to listeners, are, I think one was called Barroom Blitz, and the other one was called The Stairs, or something like this. Anyway, definitely two interesting incidents that I stretched out for an hour into a story onto the show, and gave you a sample of what it is, the book I'm working on about my life, which I've kind of stalled on, but as I said, stay tuned and you're going to find out what I'm doing about that, and also how you can participate in the process. So I think this will be fun. With me is Chris Graves, and Chris is, Don Jeffries talks about him as a part of the research team. He definitely dredges up a lot of different stuff, and has a wide array of interests that seem to converge with mine. He's been on the show recently talking about Nirvana and the Kurt Cobain case. Was he murdered, suicide? What are we talking about here? All that kind of stuff, and you got to look back in the archives to get a hold of it. Of course, he's been on a couple other radio shows doing this and that, and he's got a little bit of an interesting history when it comes to some other media outlets, but maybe we'll get into that, maybe not. Also with me is Bob Wilson, who is the host of I'm Looking Through You, and of course that normally airs on Sundays here at O'Shelly.com Live, and his shows are in the archives, and we've done a couple of special shows recently, including one with Jefferson Morley, which was only 2 days after my show, which is why I think you guys are not downloading it so much. It's a different interview, so if you want to hear more from Morley and you want to get a different take on it, Bob and I do not interview people in anywhere remotely the same way. So his talk with Morley will be way different than mine. You might want to go get that out of the archives. Of course, all that stuff is free. And like I said, normally Bob's show is just once a week on Sundays. But a couple of specials have been done. Anyway, all that having been said and gotten out there, as I started with Chris in the intro, Chris, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm okay. Just sweating heavy. It's really humid.
Yeah, well, East Coast of America, I'm sure everybody's sweating heavy. I mean, I'm kind of in the South and actually in a different temperate region from you. And sweat, I don't know. I can't tell if I'm sweating or not because the air is wet. Thank you. Am I wet or is the air wet or is the wall wet? I'm not sure. Everything is wet because of the humidity right now. Even with the sun going down, it's still hot as hell. And I don't care what they tell you on the news. We broke 100 today because I have something called a thermometer. Anyways, I don't just look at the app on the phone. Sometimes those things don't match your region. I mean, usually they're close, but occasionally not so much. We were over 100 today.
Promise you. It's a lot of guessing, and they get paid for it.
Yeah, well, there's guessing, but they also have up-to-the-minute weather. You can go on our app. Yeah, right. Good luck with that. I don't know where they get their data, but, it's not up to the minute. Anyways, you're there, and on the West Coast, believe it or not at this point, Bob Wilson, which throws me off, because every once in a while I still think of you as being in Florida, which means, I could have drove to your house if you pissed me off enough, but I didn't. I wouldn't have drove. I would have actually caught a ride. But I'm just joking, obviously. But you were not too far from me recently, and now you're on the other side of the country. Did I have anything to do with your move, Bob? I don't think so. But
being a little further away, if you did get pissed off by the time you drove here, you'd probably calm down. So that was a good factor in the plus column in my decision making.
Well, you know, I am Sicilian, so even a drive across the country isn't going to make me forget or forgive. But, you know, this is the way it rolls.
Like a Hallmark card, the Acelli line.
you ever
buy that?
I was taking notice, actually, of a couple of things. Somebody sent me a video of a bunch of mob clips trying to be funny about it. But it was like a whole bunch of mentions of Sicilians in different mob movies, and I can't even remember them all because they went by so fast. I'm laughing because even in the thing with Joe Pistone, Donnie Brasco, that you hear background of somebody saying something like, "That guy's a Sicilian? Really? He's a Sicilian?" You know what that means? Like, you actually hear it in background chatter on movies of like, Sicilians are not the same as the other Italians. You got to understand.
I think the most...
I never told you, Chuck. It's interesting if you want to know.
What's
that? My ex-girlfriend of many years ago, I thought she was kidding with me. I was making a joke, and I said, I heard crackling on the phone line, so I said we were being tapped, and I was being humorous. And then she said, we just had the line swept. So she wasn't joking. So next time I saw her, I found out that her uncle owned the famous Bergen Hunt and fishing club in the Brooklyn area.
That's a
connection. And we had an argument once. She jokingly said, but I didn't find it very amusing, "Do you know what I could have done to you?" But that is a true story. So I was being Swedish. I was sort of a novelty in the family, but they said it's a liking to me.
Swedish?
Swedish. My grandfather hailed from Gothenburg, and then he came over to New York, and here we are.
See, Wilson, I would think, would you'd probably have some German in you, but Swedish I didn't suspect.
Well, most of the family is named Magnusson.
Oh, well, there you have it.
There you go. Yeah.
So, there you go.
You know, what I was going to say was probably the most infamous Sicilian reference would be in True Romance between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken.
Yeah, Christopher Walken has been around some of these clips, too, because I noticed that. I actually like his character in Suicide Kings, which is in was a highly rated kind of thing for a bit when it came out, but then...
I liked it. Yeah, it was a good movie.
I definitely thought it was a good movie, and quite frankly, it's one of the few movies I've seen in the past, I don't know, 40 years, where I didn't know how it was going to turn out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that little twist at the end got me, actually. I did not suspect that we were going to, find out what we found out at the end there. And also, it's got some of the funniest stuff ever with Dennis Leary in it. I got some busket. I'll never forget that. I almost peed myself several times watching that part where he's with the homeless guy and he's got the stingray boots on. It's hilarious.
Dennis Leary was good in that. It's just a shame in real life, his background with Bill Hicks, that's what does it for me when it comes to Dennis Leary.
No, I understand. But
he was good in that, though.
I did find him funny for a while, and when he plays characters like that, he does well. I'm not a fan of a lot of Leary's work, but some of his stuff was hilarious. The angry comic. I'm also still a big fan of Sam Kinison. I don't care what anybody says. I love that guy. So, anyways, now we've digressed into a whole bunch of weird areas, but what is it that I want to talk to you guys about? Well, maybe, being Sicilian, not actually at the top of the list, but even in The Godfather, they point out that, the Turk is a Sicilian, handles his business, reasonable grievances. If it's personal, he might handle it with a knife.
And Sophia in Golden Girls, you got to remember that, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, she... perpetuated a lot of, she perpetuated a lot of stereotypes in there in a comedic way, but there's a reason why stereotypes are what they are. There's usually some truth to them.
Yep, same with cliches.
Yeah. So anyway, no, and on the one hand, there is that, but also truthfully, the north of Italy views the southern part of the country very differently. Again, it's not really an old country. Everybody thinks of it as an ancient country, but It's been fractured and has been separate many, many times. And Sicily is one of those places that, again, is looked down upon by a lot of the other places. But then again, a lot of the islands around, and there are many islands around Italy,
You're kidding me. There's places where people don't get along and don't like each other?
Yeah.
All in the same place?
It's kind of like they look down on them, but at the same time, that's also the heart of where the truth about the Black Hand and where the Mafia actually controlling government straight up comes from there, too.
Right.
So, I often tell the story about mailing a letter when I was over there and getting home, and a couple of months later, the letter got here. Nothing runs right unless you pay somebody, or at least that's the way it was a couple of decades ago. I understand things have changed and all that, but as much as some things change, they stay the same. So anyways, not here to talk about Sicily, although I gotta tell you, Don had a guest not too long ago that started talking about some of the real history of Italy, who was an actor, very intelligent guy, and I really wish Don had expounded upon that with him a bit.
Nick Mancuso.
Right? Yeah, because Nick was speaking some real history that's not necessarily in the books there about, the war of the kingdoms of the three kingdoms of Sicily and all that.
Right.
And the fact that, in something that's not historically recognized as a war, a whole bunch of people wiped each other out. And indeed, that is why there are not that many Ocellis. So I always find that interesting because, my family line, when they sent my grandfather out of there, it was about keeping the family line alive. Because typically, my ancestors are soldier types, is what we do, in one form or another. And that's what happened there. And it's interesting because my Irish background kind of comes together almost the same way. So it's like they sent the kids out of there because they would have probably been wiped out and this kind of thing. And that's why, my people ended up in America anyway. So, yeah, both sides. Totally,
I know, you have a really interesting background. So.
Well, that's the funny thing is I'm actually rolling this into the discussion. I want to hear from you guys on this because what I've decided to do is take the Book of My Life story and create these rough draft sort of audiobooks. And that's what I'm going to start doing on Mondays. Now, these two guys are distinctly different personality-wise, Bob and Chris. it's funny. One of the things that annoys the crap out of me about Bob is exactly part of the reason why I selected him to try and start this project with. Because he absolutely does not take my directions sometimes. It's just like, no matter what, no matter how I've tried to, he always reminds me that I must be mindful of how I communicate. Because I will say something, I think I've made it perfectly clear, and then I will come back to Bob and I have not. And it's not because he's stupid. It's not because he, just totally outright is ignoring me. Just something does not get through. I love it, though, because he retains stuff and yet doesn't. And it's just this weird thing.
What have I done to make you treat me so disrespectfully?
Well, you want me to go for it? I'll go for it. I give him directions about how the
phone... I love America.
Of course. I love America. America, yes. Anyways, yeah, so I give him directions about phone calls, and I explain to him I can only do it this way. And then he will come back to me and go, well, here, we got two people we got to call. And I can't do that the way that it's set up. I go, Bob, I already told you, I can't do this. Now, I think that I've resolved it. I think I've explained it up front, and I say to myself, well, the first time I wasn't clear about it. And then he comes back to me, tries to ask me to do it again. I figure he'll retain that. Now, a couple of weeks later... he'll basically say the same thing, and I'll go, Bob, didn't we just do this 2 weeks ago? No, I can't do it. Listen, if you want to do it this way, we need to set things up in advance, and I got to do this. Oh, okay, no problem. Sorry. All right. I think he heard me, and then he didn't. It's just it's really weird, and yet he'll retain things from conversations, so I know he can. It's not like he's got, no short-term memory or something. It's very weird. So he's got this weird mind that I don't understand. He's also very good at conducting an interview. Not just with the hokey way he does it on I'm Looking Through You. And I do call it hokey and campy. It's very funny to me. It's almost like it reminds me of Joe Franklin, the Joe Franklin show, which only people in the Northeast would probably know.
Hell yeah.
But very, very weird, very sort of like stilted, and yet, like, it's just completely like, oh, you know, it's like the Ed McMahon always had the same laugh. It's very standard-ish. It's kind of Hey-o. Crunchy, kind of dry. Yeah, he needs an Ed McMahon is what he needs. There's a guy sitting next to him, you're correct, sir. He needs that. But he doesn't have it, so it's just the hokey, Carson-y, Joe Franklin-y, kind of crunchy style. And it's consistent. It's him. It's great. But because of that, it's totally weird and totally incongruous to the very street-level things that I'm going to discuss. So I think it's perfect. So there you go. I don't know what he's going to retain, and I don't know what questions he's going to ask. And now I've kind of spoiled what these guys' jobs will be on the show. Because, see, here on the radio, I fill time. I keep talking steadily. This is not the way this is going to go. I'm going to tell a story. And at the end, I'm going to open it up for these guys to put in some kind of input. And that input may literally determine what comes next in the audiobook, may eliminate some things, and may create entire sections that I wouldn't have thought of. Now, I'm starting with these two guys, and I'm going to get to Chris and why he's so interesting, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, give me my downfall, please.
Yeah, no, but understand, it sounds like I'm insulting you. I'm not. I'm talking about your strengths.
Yeah, Bob's entertaining as hell. I love it.
No, he's
in
great.
Sicily, women are more dangerous than shotguns, gentlemen.
Yes, they are.
Me?
And once you take them out of Sicily, they don't get any less dangerous. Anyways. The thing is, Chris, on the other hand, is also strange. And here's why. Because
let me sit back in my seat and listen.
No matter what it is I say to Chris, right, and I've talked to him privately, and I've texted back and forth with him, and I talked to him on the show, no matter what I say to him, his ADD guaranteed dominates the conversation. No matter what we're talking about, it is an absolute certainty that he can spin whatever is going on into different threads that are connected, not disconnected. It's not like, you know, I got hamburgers in my pants. No, it's not like that. It's, you might, but no, it's not that out of nowhere. It's just that he will continuously spin and put together little threads of things. When he's asking questions, when he decides to call into the Friday night show, if you guys haven't heard that, all of a sudden the whole direction of the show will change because Chris is a
not necessarily for the better.
No, but it's funny because you are like the disruptive kid in the classroom who all of a sudden breaks out into a song, and now nothing else is going to get done for the rest of the class because.
You, if I'm going to fail, I'm taking you all with me.
You have hijacked the circumstance. That's you. Right. And the thing is, it's totally diametrically opposed to the way Bob behaves. So, because Bob will come in with these deadpan things and, like, shorten a response and very quietly and politely do something. And Chris will just be like, you know, like, what was that guy for years? No, remember the guy, the crazy comedian that used to run into the room and just start throwing around confetti?
Rip Taylor.
Rip Taylor, very good. I knew that Bob would know that. But anyway, Rip Taylor, yeah, like that. It's like, hello, I'm beeping a horn. I got confetti everywhere. Now I'm going to tell some dirty jokes. Boom, boom, boom.
At least give me Kinison, man.
But no, see, Kinison was very, you know, a lot of stuff with Kinison was very well staged and choreographed. You're definitely working improv. So, you know.
Lynn Farley.
I gotta go with that. See, Farley, I'm not a fan of Farley.
I gotta go.
Oh, see this? Yeah. Anyway, no, to me, Farley is just like a bad copy of Belushi. I mean,
I was going to say, let's split the difference. John Belushi.
Yeah, no. See, now, John Belushi. Yes. I get all that. Right. And I could throw a little bit of that at you. So if you take, you know, Rip right. Taylor and yeah. and John Belushi and, you know, Jim Carrey without the faces. How about that? You throw all that together. That's your comedy right there. You throw it in a blender. And quite frankly, put it in a big headed SOB like myself. This guy could be my cousin. You look at him. So
You're throwing Artie Lang.
Artie Lang. Perfect. Perfect. Artie Lang, except no heroin. Yeah.
Yeah, with the nose.
Yeah, there you go. But it all works. So, totally disruptive guy versus totally deadpan guy. Two completely different thought processes. And who knows? Maybe, you know, these guys will get sick of doing it with me. And maybe we'll change people out. Maybe I'll do them on my own, too. I don't know. But I was really happy yesterday when I had a conversation with both of them about doing this. And said, you know, it'd be most helpful to me to just really have an audience I know who's there. Now, you guys might say, why not do this on the radio? Well, because it's a different style. It's a different thought process. When I've got to get into storyteller mode about something that's very personal and emotional to me, especially, and not everything is going to be deeply emotional. Some of it's going to be probably more emotional for the listener than me. And that might be part of the strange tale you got to hear. But the thing is, it's a different mindset. You know, I relax. I don't speak with as much energy necessarily. And I'm going to be more deliberate with my speech pattern as opposed to filling up dead air and making sure we don't have dead air, which is what I do on the radio. You know, I'm not going to be conscious of time necessarily, but I'm going to try and just book these guys for two-hour journeys, and we'll take it from there and see how it goes. Anyway, each time this happens, an audiobook will be created, basically a rough draft of an audiobook, which has no book. Now, I know that sounds a little weird, but I've seen this go all different ways in media recently, where people have taken a book and created something else out of it. Of course, that's a standard thing that's always been done, especially in Hollywood, etc., etc. But, you know, there was a book, and I don't know if it got made, that was planned to be made out of the series I did with Jordan Maxwell, which I signed off on and surrendered any rights to whatever it is I did as far as them creating this book. I don't know if it got done because poor Jordan passed away a couple of months ago, as you all know. So I don't know if that ever got done. And by the way, I signed away all rights because I would have preferred that Jordan made something if there was going to be money to be made there, because the guy had been ripped off enough times by other people. So obviously I told Jordan, listen, if you make $1 million, keep me in mind. But, you know, if you're just making something, you know, please, by all means, take it. Anyways, but the thing is, this will be a little different because I'm going to ask for you guys to support it. And the only way that you're going to get the book is, you know, or these different audios, which will be, again, unique, special. They're not going to have an intro and outro like the show usually does. I have a bit of an idea about a design audio-wise. I am not intending to edit these things very much. So I'm hoping that I can, A, keep Chris on track, and B, you know, keep Bob from clogging up time with hokiness, because I want to make sure that you guys are very sharp and concise when you come on toward the end. And I know it's a bit of a challenge, and each of them is doing this voluntarily. And, you know, basically the same thing that I asked for out of Jordan is what I told these guys I would do. You know, look, if it makes a little something, that's what I'm looking to do. If somehow this becomes a much larger, successful thing, we'll talk about what your part of it is, and I am never opposed to cutting somebody in if there is a pie to cut up. So there's that, and I may change it. I actually have an idea about bringing in a couple of other people, maybe in addition to Bob and Chris, and then again, maybe swapping them out occasionally. But I'm going to keep these two guys in the loop throughout the whole project, and they, along with myself, will be the only people I guarantee will have all the audiobooks. So that's the way that's going to go. And I don't know if I've clearly explained this or not, so why don't we go with, let's not go with Bob, because he only listens to half of what I say, and never listens to my show anyway, so there's no point
in
me
asking. That's not true. I'm always in the chat room. I never get credit.
You are in the chat room occasionally, but I'm on five nights a week, and I know you're not there five nights a week, Bob. It's all right, though. You know what? I don't expect people to really listen to my show. There is one host on the network who does listen to seemingly every one of my shows.
I was listening in like 2 weeks ago, and you were telling everybody how I don't listen, and I was in the audience.
But how many times have I said, you know, he says something to me off air. He goes, well, you should have this person on. I'm like, yeah, I just did that last week, Bob.
Well, at least that confirms. That's like my validating your decisions. I didn't even know, and I'm saying you should do what you did. That's like a pat on the back.
There you go.
You see the weirdness with him? He's going to turn things around and do stuff like that. That's why you got to be in on this, Bob, because I think also you're going to be, based on your sensibilities, I think you're going to be horrified by some things that I'm going to explain, because I'm going to leave nothing off limits. I had discussions.
And I'm going to say that, hey, that wasn't enough, man.
Yeah, well, get ready. You guys are going to hear about, you know, look, and it's not a poor me kind of thing. I'm not one of these guys. So it's going to be interesting, and I think it's going to have an arc that, look, I got from, you know, probably should have been dead as a kid somewhere long time ago, to I'm still alive, I'm still kicking, and generally speaking, people that know me would not think of me as a bad guy or anything, but there were other times in my life where definitely I'd been seen as a menace to society, and maybe somebody was irredeemable by a lot of people that were supposedly experts on this kind of thing. And I've said before, even on air, that, I mean, if you want a textbook about how to raise a serial killer, if you were reading it back in the 80s or 90s, you basically were reading, you know, a lot of my life story. So literally, this is how you create a repeated violent offender, and I'm not that guy. I make an active choice not to be that guy, and
So let me guess, you were a bedwetter and you lit fires. Don't tell me you tortured animals, because that sucks.
No, none of that. See, now that's that triad, which is inaccurate, and even psychiatrists today will tell you that that's not right.
No, I know. I'm just
but
kidding.
No, I know, but everything else that goes along with that, lighting fires. Well, we'll get to that. torturing animals? No.
Yeah,
and pissing myself? No. This kind of thing I didn't do much, you know, not until I discovered alcohol later. And, you know, I'm the guy who could get fall down, literally crawl on the floor, vomit and urinate on yourself drunk, and wake up the next day with no hangover, which didn't do me any favors. But alcohol didn't dominate my life either. But if I was going to do it, why not do it all the way, even as a teenager? And, yeah, there's some stories about that. Even younger than a teenager. But anyway, there's a lot that could be said there. So, look, as of right now, I've laid this out kind of in public again, and I've laid it out with you guys on a call yesterday. So I just sort of want to go to, you know, first the ADD addled mind of... the guy who is a supposedly a researcher, but definitely a finder of factoids. I'll tell you that. I never seen anybody dig up factoids as quickly and as abundantly on you know, a basket of subject matter really fast and spin it all around. I mean, like I said, one minute I could be talking music, the next minute we're talking about Columbine, horror movies. You know, and exactly what strip clubs used to operate like. And that's the first 5 minutes of talking to this guy. So, you know, I don't know. Out of your mind, what are your thoughts on this project? And, you know, the very basics, I haven't really filled you in that much on it, but I think enough to give you a sense of what we're going to do. So what are your thoughts, Chris?
Well, I got the gist of it, and I think it's a really good idea, especially if you want to make it eventually. I'm not sure if this is still your angle or not, but if you want to make it into a screenplay later on, this would be a good foundation, you know, to kind of get it all laid out, and that way you can pick and choose later on which are the most compelling, you know, aspects of it to put in said screenplay, if that's the direction that you're going in. But even if you don't do that, I think it's a good experiment in audio entertainment, and I think you have a story to tell that is definitely unique with all the different aspects of, like, the music side of it, the JFK and conspiracy research in general, that angle.
Oh, something might have happened to Chris's... You still with me, Bob?
I am still with you, Chuck.
Yeah, Chris's Skype, or he might have hit his mute button there when he was talking about the different angles or different things that go on. Now, what's weird about this is that, Chris, I don't know if you can hear us. I don't know what's going on, but somehow we're not hearing you. So might force me to have to go over to Bob Wilson a little sooner than I thought. I think what Chris was saying, though, is that these different elements and the kind of diverse things that have gone on in my life, it's fascinating. I got to figure out exactly how to explain that, because I compartmentalized things, and there are certain aspects of my life. Like, my first wife had an idea that I had an interest in the JFK assassination, but I literally kept that entire thing from her because she was such a destructive human being. And the relationships and the contacts were so weird that I didn't want to chance them in with her touching them. So, like, I, you know, when I was married, I went to the 2003 conference, you know, only because it came up last minute. Somebody was going out that way from Jersey. And quite frankly, again, my now ex and now deceased first wife, well, she just used to get into fights with me almost every week and go up to her mother's house in Connecticut. So she goes away. And that's what I did. I went away and went to the conference in Pittsburgh in 2003. Stuff like this would go on all the time, and she had no clue about, you know, well, he's for some reason interested in that. That's all she knew. Oh, and that I sold the news footage in its complete form on eBay for a little while. She knew that part of it, but nothing else, Bob. You know, and then there were other people that, as a musician, I did not allow them to know that I had a very serious criminal past, because, frankly, the musicians in New Jersey, at least in the section I was in, was made up of a lot of mama's boys that still lived at home with their parents, that, you know, were not part of the urban scene. They came into Asbury. It was like, you know, them going to the zoo, because they were not used to anything outside of the suburban enclaves that they existed in. And, you know, who else is going to, you know, have their mommies be able to buy guitars and amps when they're kids, and drum sets and things like this, and also to be able to play drums in your house? You need a basement garage, something like that, and that's a house, as opposed to, you know, those of us that were poor living in shoeboxes. So it was a different world. I had to prevaricate, to place up a Chinese wall, so to speak, around my criminal past, and, you know, had to play up different things, because at 15 I was making a decision as to whether I was going to, you know, continue to go back in the lockup, or I was going to change my direction, and I changed that with music. Now, that's a little hint at something that goes on, but it also shows that there's multiple things going on at the same time. So, you know, finishing out court cases and trying to put together a band were two different elements of my life, while also, you know, still insisting on going to high school because I wanted to make sure I graduated. Weird thing, kind of a waste of time in retrospect, but it was one of those things I wanted to make sure I earned, was a high school diploma. Anyway, bunch of stories could be mined out of that, and we'll try and get Chris back. But Bob, what are your thoughts so far? Before, you know, let's see where Deadpan Alley meets this, because well, I love the way you do stuff. It's like you'll just deadpan lay out your dry joke, and you're very good at it. It's like it's that hits you in stages kind of thing. I love it. It's like slow motion. It's beautiful. Anyway, Bob, I'll shut up and just turn it over to you.
Well, Don Ocelli, they say you brought up Jersey. New Jersey was very close to where I hail from in New York. And they say in New Jersey everything's legal as long as you don't get caught. So as far as that goes, I have no personal problems with your background. That said, you're a serious man, a man who deserves our respect. So we've met with you today, Christopher and myself. I think your story strikes a vein of interest from the time that you were young. It's a human condition story. It tugs at the strings of the heart. The situation you found yourself in as a youth and the people who reached out to you wouldn't be the normal people who we would expect. And in and of itself, that's a story that lets us see into a world that many readers and moviegoers always find interesting. You mentioned maybe you didn't suffer enough in your life to make a story, but that's really not true. As long as there's redemption and human interest, there's enough in there that tugs at the heartstrings of suffering and such. That's certainly enough for a story. It's not a contest on that level. And then, as you mentioned, you have, you know, women come to movies for the romance. And you have stories about your marriage and your next marriage more successful. So we wish blessings upon you with that and those stories. You're an interesting man in that you've won awards for your research in the JFK field and your podcasting and your music. So we're coming at this with very many different angles. And then the reason you're on a podcast is your ability to tell a story, which can translate into the audio book that you're doing and possibly a screenplay. And I think that this is a win-win situation. And you asked me for my insight, and I give it. And someday, and that day may never come, I may call upon you to do a service for me. But in the meantime, please take my advice from the bottom of my heart with all good wishes.
See, here we go. All kinds of allusions to The Godfather, which he knows I'm a sucker for. And it's a beautiful thing. We might have Chris back by now.
Yeah. Where did I get cut off? My laptop's a piece of crap.
It's okay. Look, we'll sort it out. Who knows? Maybe I can help you sort that out a little bit at some point very soon. Depending on what it is you choose to do with your media presence and everything, you're going to need something a little more reliable. And either we got to fix that up or we got to get you something. Anyways.
No, but where did I leave off? Like when I don't know.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there, Chris. Fourth wall break. I'm trying to wind you up in a natural way so that you catch up and the audience does too. Anyways, so at the point at which we lost contact, Chris, we'll just go for it straight ahead. You were saying that you see these different aspects of what went on, and it could be just interesting in and of itself because it's sort of diverse. You got the music end of it, which I don't even think I started writing about in the written form, which I sent each of these guys copies of my rough draft, which is just my early life, really. Well, it kind of gets into the middle, too, I guess. I guess we get into my teenage years almost in the rough draft there. But we're going to tell all that again in the audio form. And as I was explaining to Bob when you dropped out, there are parallels here, and there's also a very weird thing that we're going to have to explain overlap-wise, because there were certain points at which I was living double and triple kind of lives through necessity. The first thing is that I was quite a bit of a criminal at certain points very early in life, and it was difficult to participate in other parts of society having that on me, even though I'd never been busted for the majority of the types of things I ever did. I used to get myself only in trouble, really, when I lost my temper. And that happened a few times. But anyway, there's a story behind that, and there's a story behind trying to, keep, let's just say, the white boys who lived in suburbia, who were basically, mama's boys, who could afford musical instruments. You couldn't let them know, I was corner dealing drugs, when I was seven, first time, this kind of thing. And we lost Chris again, it looks like. Anyway, no natural roll into that discussion. We're going to have to straighten out his laptop, that's for sure. But
yes.
Anyway, Bob.
Yes, sir.
So I think this will be interesting in that, it could be something. I don't know if it'll become a screenplay. I see it as, now that people have sort of alerted me to the idea that some of this stuff might be, a little more rare, that not everybody... I always thought a lot of people had to have gone through a lot of what I went through. In a weird way, their own version of it. Even though I knew that some of it was definitely meant to be kept secret and all this kind of stuff. So I don't have the outsider perspective, which is basically what you guys are going to provide. Now, you grew up, again, in Queens, which... is part of New York, for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure everybody knows, because it's one of the most famous places on earth, the New York metro area. And if you don't know Queens at all, you might have just seen, the movie Coming to America with Eddie Murphy, right? And you get a sense that Queens has, some interesting things going on there. At one point, it was one of the most racially diverse places on earth, literally speaking. They had a World's Fair there. I mean, the Mets are from there. It's interesting, but you grew up in definitely a different circumstance than I did. And I don't know how much of, like, the other side of the world necessarily a guy like you might understand at all. But I always thought that, people got a window into it through Hollywood and through, their fascination with various things. And not just the criminal stuff. You know, the criminal stuff might be the most interesting to some people, but...
My father was a policeman, so I was hard to convict.
Well, there's always that. And by the way, you're making a joke, but I knew kids like that where it was like, this guy doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, take him with us. Because he's definitely going to get let go because, you know, or there was a she at one point. Take them with us because, you know, the kid of a cop usually doesn't get in as much trouble. Now, I know I've been told that, you don't worry, you know, my father will take care of that and all this. But, I got to say, I never saw a cop's kid go to jail. It might be a lot of different reasons for it. And even when they got cuffed next to me, they didn't stay cuffed very long. So, you know, there's a different...
Every job has its perks.
Yeah, every job does have its perks. And not saying this about your father or anything, but most of the police officers that I ever got to know were either very corrupt or they were guys that became, according to the code of the street that I understood, guys that you do not absolutely bother in any way, shape, or form, them or their families. And why? Because they're doing their job and they're honest. They're doing their job, you do yours, whatever happens at the end of the day, it's just their job. And so that's the only two kinds of cops I ever encountered, and believe me, I encountered more of them that would be happy to take some drugs, some money, that would rob dealers, that would rob, you know, the card game, that would, take a little bit of the swag that fell off the truck. That's what I encountered more than any of the honest guys, but the honest guys always stood out like, you know, like nails on a board. You avoid stepping on them at all costs.
Well, I can tell you this much, Chuck. When my father was 12, his father was a truck driver. He died of a massive heart attack instantly. So my dad had to drop out of school to work to help my grandmother raise his brother, who was only 5 years old. So through that, my father learned to, he had his wits about him, but he was very loyal, you know, very caring for his family from that experience. So he went after he, helped support the family and things stabilized. He joined the military so that he could try to finish an education and have a way in the world. And then when he got out, he became a policeman. So for his general demeanor, he didn't want any funny business. He never wanted to risk his family. I think that incident had a tremendous effect on him. So I respected him, but I was never afraid of him. But when I look back, he was a fairly tough guy. But he never hit me or gave me a hard time. As for myself, actually, my earlier life was actually written into a book, but I decided not to publish it, but a publisher actually wanted it. So there were some stories there. But from that experience, I have an ear. So I can listen to what you've told, and I think that you have enough to make an interesting book that people would be attracted to. And people want to empathize with another person. They want to hear a story. They want to hear of your redemption because they've gone through things and they want hope. So they also want to be entertained. So when you go through your story, there's a lot of roller coaster highs and lows. You've touched into the criminal world. You've touched into the music world. You've touched into assassination research, politics, your early life, you know, which you shared with me a bit that was kind of like on the street. The problems that, you know, the issues you had to deal with from early on birth and with your dad and what he went through and those things. There's a lot of human interest there. And I think that as a decent person, you've tried to make a better life and a better world. And when you put these things together, I do indeed think that you come away with a story that's worth telling.
Well, I appreciate that. And I hope you retain that feeling as we go through this process, because, again, it's going to be, you know, I know this. That they've made movies out of people's stories, and they've made books out of people's stories that are less compelling. The closest thing to something like this would be Angelia's story. That you introduced me to Angelia there, Angelia Bianca. And she's become a nonviolence activist and all this. I don't know the technical term. They're like anti-violence activists, I mean, on a serious level. Sure. You know, and she's an interesting character too. You know, I've known other people that have gone through these transitions, right? One of my favorite friends who I wish I was still in contact with was Brother Frank Minucci, and I don't know if he's even still alive. Last I checked, he was. But, you know, and he had a couple of minutes of fame there. Was in the movie Carlito's Way, was in the movie Ghost Dog, stuff like this. There's a book out there, probably you can get cheap somewhere, called Brother Frank. And, you know, he goes from being a Hell's Angel and mob associate to, at a certain point, becoming a motorcycle-riding priest. You know, very dedicated to good works. And, you know, the guy who I actually wanted to baptize my oldest son, and I would have had officiate a wedding of mine if I could have gotten him. frankly, I was going to do that the second time I got married, but that was precluded by my I've actually had what I would count as three wives, Bob, by the way. Two of them were married in one of them by a justice of the peace and the other one by a Christian minister, but the Christian minister was selected by my then fiance's mother. Because they had a family association with the church, and it was Methodist, and I had been baptized Methodist, so that's what they wanted. I gave into that. But I would have had Brother Frank officiate that, and I take him as a true man of a true man of God and a true man of principle at this stage in his life, or at the stage that he was at back then. And I have a great deal of respect for a guy who walked away. And in fact, if you want to hear a little bit about Brother Frank's story, if you dig up a little old show that used to be on HBO called Mob Stories, you could pick up Brother Frank's story on there, because he was a little pissed off because they put him on the same episode as like Sammy the Bull and all this, guys who had ratted on the mob, which he never did. So he was like, I'm not a rat. They put me on there because I got out, but I'm not a rat. And he never did, although he did answer honestly, because later on, he was a Christian minister, and he's one of the people that Robert Blake contacted. So, you know, he felt it his duty. Well, for the listener, Chris, just try and catch up, right? So I don't got to re-explain. But Brother Frank was contacted by Robert Blake, and a big Inquirer story got done and all that about how he had been, you know, one of the Hollywood stuntmen that Blake had contacted to see if he could get his wife killed, but he never ratted on anybody in the syndicate, let's say. But Robert Blake, he was perfectly willing to testify against. anyway, you know, there's different
Robert Blake.
Yeah.
All right, dummy. You know, I've seen a lot of tough guys. You're a tough guy. You know what? Most of the tough guys I know, they're looking out at the world from the wrong side of a set of bars. You know that, dummy? You know that? You look down at the grass. You're looking up at the wrong side of the root, looking up at the sky. I've seen a lot of tough guys like that. You're a tough guy? I'm going to help you today, but you know what? But I find you screwed up, I'm going to be on you. I'm going to be right there. I'm going to follow you every step of the way. And if you screw up, I'm going to bust you. Don't make me sorry for being nice to you today, because I tell you, you don't want to be looking at the wrong side of a blade of grass, so you just listen to me. And that's the name of that tune.
Right. Chris, you have any idea what he was just talking about?
No, I'm just really pissed off right now.
You can watch a lot of episodes of Beretta.
I'm messing with you, Bob. I just was like, just having fun with you. That's my deadpan.
Cockatoo. You got to love the cockatoo. Any street tough guy trying to help people find redemption with a cockatoo is definitely on my A-list.
See, this is me messing
with
you.
He's the only murderer, but I'm happy who was released because he brought me so much joy on Beretta.
What's the matter? You don't like OJ? All right. Anyways, I got some listeners that really honestly think OJ's innocent, but anyways, shout out to you guys, and also big shout out to Patricia B, who is I will call her the executive producer of tonight's show, and the reason is that she is one of my longest standing supporters, and I know that she is supportive of this project as well. The only listener that I really turned on to what it is I plan on doing ahead of time, because I just had the conversation with you guys. I had this idea in my head for a little bit, but we're discussing what I'm going to do with the audiobook and this version of it, which there could be several versions of it eventually, but this version of it will be unique, and we're going to come up with a support structure for how it is you can support the project, and only if you are supporting the project actively will you have access to it. It's just going to be that simple. And also, I'm going to be taking off Monday nights to meet with these two guys and just lay out the story as it goes, first of all. But secondly, as you can see, even though Chris has had technical issues here, they are uniquely possessed of attitudes and thought processes that that will definitely make the story more diverse and colorful. So we're going to start with them as sort of the only two guys I'm telling the story to. But you'll be able to share in that. It will not be broadcast. It will not be fed through the regular podcast feed. Just telling you now. So one less show a week, but the audiobooks are going to start to come out. Now we're going to give away the introduction. That's going to go through everything on my podcast feed and all that. The introductory section of what is the theoretical book, right? So we'll do that, and I'll provide to you guys the details of how it is you can support this and participate in it as we go forward. But so far, Chris Graves and Bob Wilson are the two guys I've attached to go through this with me. This is what we call in the business, ready for this, Chris, you're going to love it, workshopping. Okay. We're going to workshop this thing and see where it goes. Who knows? Maybe it is a movie script. Maybe it's a book. Maybe it'll just be this audio presentation that'll just be available to people who directly supported this separate. And the reason why I'm doing this separately and everything is because there's not enough coming into the network to even really sustain it. And the truth is I'm going to make some changes to the network this week. And change up the amount of time maybe I'm investing in certain other people's business and things like that. Just because Bob is on the line, I'll tell you this, I'm not going to cancel. I'm looking through you. Unless Bob wants to cancel it, that's up to him. But
no, Bob doesn't want to cancel it. Bob enjoys it.
Fair enough. But here's the thing. Potentially, everything else could be up on the chopping block depending on what's going on. And I've got my issues with this and that, and I'm not saying anything about anybody else, but Bob is here, so I'll just say that Bob and I are fine, and we're going to keep doing what we're doing. Now, I might ask Bob to change his day at some point, but not yet, because Sunday has kind of worked out pretty well. He is definitely one of those unique individuals, so I'm more than happy to keep him on the island of misfit toys here that we call Ocelli.com. And that's what we're going to do. Plus, I would never, ever think to do some of the interviews that Bob has done. I would never think to follow up on certain things. I'm not as big a Beatles fan, as I've said many times, and all that stuff. But Bob does some pretty interesting stuff outside of his Beatles stuff over there. So we're going to get ready to take a break. Chris, during the break, we'll organize and figure out where you need to go next, because I've been just talking to Bob now for the majority of the hour and also talking to the audience, but want to get your feedback. You're still with us, right?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Listen, if I'm not busting your balls, that means I'm ignoring you.
No, it's not you. I look forward to this, and I'm just kind of bummed out, that's all.
Matt, look, don't be bummed out. It is what it is, my brother, and we'll just take it forward into the next hour. So,
all right.
And by the way, for the audience, I'm not sure if we're going to make a full 2 hours out of this tonight. We'll see where the discussion goes, but this will be released as a podcast as per usual. And we'll get into further what it is we're going to start next Monday and release, like I said, the introduction, that section of the book that is being created here pseudo audio book. I don't know what to call it. But people create different types of media and then turn it into something else. This is the age we live in. So I'm going to try and do that, try and scare up some more funds for the network, because I just like everybody else, I'm getting squeezed, and even the electric bill is doubled. So you know what? I need a way to raise money. I need a way to give you guys some value for value. So this is going to be the plan. And we might actually discuss a few other things because I want to get maybe these guys' takes on a couple of current events and give you more of an idea why it is they're definitely the strange choices that'll partner up here and make a lot of sense with what it is we're doing. I don't know if I've articulated that yet or allowed these guys to, but we'll get into more of that in the second hour as the Ocelli Effect continues.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles started to really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Chili.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah,
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And you know, some people would say that look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model too. And look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain, okay? Because people want to support you, they love you to death, but honestly,
so if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show, and I want you to do this too, because you know, the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, you know, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Ocelli.com.
Smoke free. A diversified multicultural postmodern deconstruction is politically, anatomically, and ecologically incorrect. I've been uplinked and downloaded, I've been inputted and outsourced, I know the upside of downsizing, I know the downside of upgrading. I'm a high-tech lowlife, a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, bi-coastal multitasker, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm new wave, but I'm old school, and my inner child is outward bound. I'm a hot-wired, heat-seeking, warm-hearted, cool customer, voice-activated and biodegradable. I interface with my database is in cyberspace, so I'm interactive, I'm hyperactive, and from time to time, I'm radioactive. Behind the eight ball, ahead of the curve, riding the wave, dodging the bullet, pushing the envelope. I'm on point, on task, on message. oxygen, off drugs. I got no need for coke and speed. I got no urge to binge and purge. I'm in the moment, on the edge, over the top, but under the radar. A high concept, low profile, medium range ballistic missionary. A streetwise smart bomb. A top gun bottom feeder. I wear power ties, I tell power lies, I take power naps, I run victory laps. I'm a totally ongoing Bigfoot slam dunk rainmaker with a proactive outreach. A raging workaholic. A working rageaholic. Out of rehab and in denial. I got a personal trainer, a personal shopper, a personal assistant, and a personal agenda. You can't shut me up, you can't dumb me down, because I'm tireless and I'm wireless. I'm an alpha male on beta blockers. I'm a non-believer and an overachiever, laid back but fashion forward. Up front, down home, low rent, high maintenance. Supersized, long-lasting, high-definition, fast-acting, oven-ready, and built to last. I'm a hands-on, foot-loose, knee-jerk head case, prematurely post-traumatic, and I have a love child who sends me hate mail. But I'm feeling, I'm caring, I'm healing, I'm sharing. A supportive, bonding, nurturing, primary caregiver. My output is down, but my income is up. I take a short position, I'm a long bond, and my revenue stream has its own cash flow. I read junk mail, I eat junk food, I buy junk bonds, I watch trash sports. I'm gender-specific, capital-intensive, user-friendly, and lactose intolerant. I like rough sex. I like tough love. I use the F word in my email, and the software on my hard drive is hardcore, no soft porn. I bought a microwave at a mini mall, I bought a minivan at a megastore. I eat fast food in the slow lane. I'm toll-free, bite-sized, ready-to-wear, and I come in all sizes. A fully equipped, factory-authorized, hospital-tested, clinically proven, scientifically formulated medical miracle. I've been pre-washed, pre-cooked, pre-heated, pre-screened, pre-approved, pre-packaged, post-dated, freeze-dried, double-wrapped, vacuum-packed, and I have an unlimited broadband capacity. I'm a rude dude, but I'm the real deal. Lean and mean, cock-blocked and ready to rock. Rough, tough, and hard to bluff. I take it slow, I go with the flow, I ride with the tide, I get glide in my stride. Driving and moving, sailing and spinning, jiving and grooving, wailing and winning. I don't snooze, so I don't lose. I keep the pedal to the metal and the rubber on the road.
If you want to play Blind Man, Ochilly.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
In denial. Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
When a fan of the Ochilly Effect calls in to the Ochilly Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and J.P. Sicilian and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Ochilly.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Ochilly.com.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ochilly.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ochilly.com or Chuck Ochilly, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Second hour of the Ochilly Effect begins now, and I actually speak on the fade, which I can't get Bob Wilson to do on his show. I'm looking through you, but that's okay. you can talk when the music's fading on your show, Bob. There's always that second and a half I got to cut out of the podcast where you wait after the music fades all the way out. Anyway.
I think the things that I can't grasp make me more human and, you know, appreciated by the listener.
Well, you know, it's kind of like that dog that you just can't convince. He's a great dog, but you can't, no matter what you do, he looks at you confused every time you say, get off my chair. like you just said it for the first time. Really? Okay. Yeah. So now I've just compared Bob Wilson to a dog.
I concur.
I've just compared Bob Wilson to a dog. Hopefully he's not talking to anybody like David Berkowitz. And, yeah, you can find that in his archives, too, a little thing on Berkowitz and a guy who swears that he was not shot by David Berkowitz. Yeah.
That's right.
So, and Chris is back with us, and a listener may have provided Chris with a solution. We'll find out about that in the future. But anyway, Chris, I wanted to get back to what you were talking about last hour. So this will actually give Bob a couple of minutes of space if he needs it.
There you go.
Anyway, this happened.
I'll have to see the wizard.
There you go. You do that. you see how, like, you could just flow with something and live on air, you just, and then Bob just doesn't do that. He's aware of it, but he doesn't do that. All right, anyway, I love the guy mainly because I know his heart's in the right place, and he is definitely a different sort of guy, so he does fit on the Island of Misfit Toys, as I said. Anyways, Chris, you too could fit on the Island of Misfit Toys. I wouldn't mind developing a show with you. I have no idea how the hell that would run, though, with your ADD. I love it. Because I have the same thought process, and I do have the ability to ramble on, but usually I can't go in as many directions as fast as you do, so your speed is amazing. But you were doing something a bit concisely when you got interrupted by technological issues. So, you were talking about what you thought about this project, and I see in the chat room somebody said I would be interested in a Ocelli Tell Almost All book. Only two things that I'm going to keep out of that audiobook if we actually get it all the way through, and I don't know if we're going to get all the way through my 50 years, which is what I wanted to do, all the way through the story arc. We'll see if we do. If it's supported, we'll go all the way and get it done. But there's only two things I'm going to leave out of it, and I'll tell you this up front. Anything that I believe could be told that would put another person's freedom in jeopardy, I might not reveal. And that includes things that maybe don't have a statute of limitation. So I'm just saying that those things, I am not going to reveal something that could cause somebody else a problem. I'll put it to you that way. So if there is somebody that maybe I know something about, perhaps I'll change their name, or maybe I won't tell that part of the story, etc., that might happen. And even if, say, law enforcement were ever to investigate it, you're not getting a damn thing out of me, is all I'm telling you, and you never have. So we'll leave it that way. Now, if we're talking about stuff that happened many, many years ago and no longer could be prosecutable, you know, that's a possibility that those things could be discussed. But no.
Charles Ocelli's private parts.
kind of. So that's the only thing I'm going to leave out. The rest of it, and honestly, I mean, look, not everything has a hero's end to it. I'm not going to sit there and overwhelm people with a whole bunch of depressing stories. I'm just going to go into some key things that are relevant to the way life unfolded later. Many, many more days. And I enjoyed telling a couple of the stories that I did on air. And I urge you guys to go back and go take a listen to you know, the story about the bar room, which I told in short on the Ripple Effect recently. Told a very short version of that.
It was good appearance.
Well, the full hour version of that got a lot of reaction, which convinced me that I should at some point make the book happen. And I wasn't even going to include that story necessarily in the book, but now I've decided it needs to be there. But I also told a story which does involve a staircase and just a confrontation that I told in great detail with you know, basically, what is it like when you're a child and you got to fight with a grown man? Well, this is the way this works. So, spoiler there. And that was
eventful. I've had to do that, too. Yeah, it's not pretty.
Yeah. But the truth is, you know, the stories that I've told so far might be a little more positive the way they turned out. There's tons of negativity many a day that you know, contemplating whether it was better to be dead or alive happened for me very early in life and did not stop happening for a very long time. And indeed, I'll tell you this, that even today, you know, sometimes I'm wondering what I'm still doing here. Anyways, that is so you're going to see some of that, but also there's going to be some funny stuff in there, I think. You know, some revealing this and that. A couple of the famous people that I've run across, some of which I have either not talked about or only mentioned on the show. And, you know, again, kind of just what sort of happened organically, you know. You know, I met some interesting people. I'm always happy to talk about, even during the break here, I talked about meeting Lemmy Kilmister. That was a great day and everything. But that's not an eventful story. Meeting Fat Tony Salerno, though, was more of an eventful story, but not a lot of action there. It's not really meant for the screen, but it's interesting. Being in the same room with Donald Trump at one point, something that I didn't admit to for a long time. But, you know, when you know people who work security in New Jersey and, you know, guys like Vince McMahon run events there in Atlantic City along with Trump, and they hire cheaply on the local end people that, you know, might be local tough guys. I might have known a lot of those guys. So, yeah. Anyway, ended up in a room with Donald Trump. Wow. Not a big interaction with him or anything, but I got my feelings on it, and maybe I'll tell that story in there. And it's not just about famous people. It's weird circumstances, stuff that I guarantee people would not think about goes on behind the scenes and in that part of what I call America to be the invisible. You know, they talk about it being indivisible. Well, there are parts of this country that are certainly invisible, and the reason is that some people can't handle the look at it, some people never encounter it, and yet it's going on all around them, whether they know it or not. So, going to talk about that whole thing, and even getting into the music scene, and the weird world of JFK research, as you mentioned, which is where you got cut off, where, you know, there's some interesting little changes there. These are entirely different worlds you can live in. And I existed, you know, sometimes with one foot in one place and one foot in the other. And maybe that's an interesting story. I don't know. Because quite honestly, I thought that the majority of it was not very interesting until I ran out of material to do on my radio show. And thought, well, let's just tell a story tonight. And by doing that, I'm inspired that it might be of interest. And it might actually be something that encourages other people to at least never quite surrender. Again, the project is going to be called Halfway to Hell, and we're going to start recording it next week, and Chris Graves and Bob Wilson are going to be along with me. But Chris, you got cut off in the midst of explaining what your thoughts were on the project, so I wanted to let you do that, and then maybe we'll just dedicate the rest of the time tonight to whatever is on each of you gentlemen's minds, because I've certainly talked my way through enough of this 2 hours. You know, I hate
to
sound
like... Yeah, believe me, I wanted to contribute, believe me.
It's all right. Now you can. So go ahead until your computer lets go again.
I hear you. I think it's a great idea and a good experiment. And I'm just, I'm honored that you would, you asked me to be a part of it. I'm trying to think. Like, I had a whole bunch of different things I wanted to say, but... Now it'd be kind of redundant. I'm not sure exactly where
I'll give you an easy way to go at this. Bob had talked a little bit about his background because we talked about mutually having different views of, say, police, because his father was a police officer. And I always saw police in two categories, generally speaking. Mostly they were the enemy, as far as I'm concerned. And to this day, I'll tell you, I'm the guy who does not call cops. They never make a situation better in my mind, and coming from where I came from, that's probably a generous position for me to take. But the truth is, I only saw cops in two ways, which is one, either somebody that could be bought off or paid off, you know, easily, and he who pays best gets best results, as far as being able to operate and things like that. And that was the truth, you know, literally been robbed by a cop when I'm dealing drugs. Sometimes for the drugs, sometimes for the money. Other times, you know what? You take care of his wife's pill habit, and all of a sudden you got a cop who looks the other way. Things like this go on, all right? So I see him that way, and then I saw the other side of it, which was, you know, according to the very hard, fast rules of the street, I understood, an honest cop was a guy you don't touch, you don't screw with, you let him do his job, and even if in the course of doing his job it causes you problems, so be it. This is the situation. And I said, even, you know, maybe Bob's dad was an honest cop. That's what he says, so I'll take his word for it. And that means he would be one of these guys that, believe it or not, whether it's a, you know, criminal Italians or it's just street kids or whatever, an honest cop doing his job, you leave him alone, you don't bother him, and you give him enough respect that and slack, basically, you give him space, you let the man go through. It's just that simple. But they were not as numerous as the guys that you could pay off, buy off, or send off. So, anyway, what about your background, Chris? You want to talk a little bit about that? Because that might skew your view on where I'm coming from.
That,
so
that could go pretty dark. you got a lot of guts, telling your life story. Like, I thought for years that I would want to do that myself, but I feel like, you know, the best parts have yet to happen, so that's what I'm working my way towards currently. So if any chance to help you, you know, tell your story, it's very appealing to me, so I'm very excited about it too.
Well, I'll tell you that this ought to be interesting and informative. And like I said, it was just stepping forward a little bit that that, you know, got me to even think it was remotely worth telling. And you never know. Maybe this will inspire something else. I mean, you could always make a novelization or something out of some elements of your life story as well. I mean, listen, what at the end of the day are... you know, most of what entertains and educates people, well, it's in one way or another people relating to storytellers. I mean, this is something that, regardless of the language or the culture, is always, good.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, just in terms of world history, in terms of human history, no one can deny the idea that the storyteller and the stories they tell literally do have a primary role in shaping civilization in general. And sometimes those stories are dark, and sometimes they become religions. And sometimes those stories are just the things that resonate and are retold in one form or another and over again. You know?
Well, what I'll say is I basically, since very young in life, have always wanted to be a storyteller or be a performer, you know, actor, musician, you know, whatever. And I feel like a lot of the pain that, you know, I may have experienced is going to serve some other function, you know, in a positive way, in terms of, you know, dealing with that through, you know, art, you know. So, you know, right now, I'm actually going through, you know, probably the most difficult time in my life. And, you know, I'm almost at midlife. That's the thing. But I feel like I haven't really even begun yet. And, you know, I'm basically, my end goal is to, you know, knock out a couple of independent films, you know, that have something to say, you know. And whether there's an audience that, you know, gets attached to that, it is a bonus, just as long as, you know, I'm able to, you know, while I'm still breathing, be able to, you know, make that a reality and not just, you know, the whimsies in my head for years and years, you know. And so I understand exactly what you're saying. Just, you know, through art, you know, it does shape human evolution to a certain extent. I mean, at least as far as, you know, the powers that be will let it, you know.
Well, see,
I think that's kind
that's
of
a curious thing right there, because the powers that be might try to control narratives all the time, but here's what they cannot control is every narrative, you know, and that which some people insert into modern popular culture quite often has unintended consequences. And sometimes that is a positive and sometimes it's a negative, and we can debate about all that, but I don't want to do that today. I'm just saying that, you know, your contribution to that could be, you know, the possibilities are endless for what could be created.
With the ADD situation, I feel like when you're reading these chapters that you wrote, I might be able to pick out certain things that you or Bob might not necessarily even pay attention to or might think is insignificant, but I might be able to tie it around in a way that, you know, might be more appealing, or may, you know, or maybe not, but definitely a different perspective. I believe in myself with that ability. So,
well, here's what
I'm just honored to be a part of it.
Yeah. And here's what I know for certain and why it is I'm picking both of you. And by the way, you're both my top picks to begin with. I've got a couple other people in mind that might add some unique perspectives to certain parts of this. And might be able to guide it as it goes, because you're going to be guiding this too, whether you know it or not. I'm not taking orders from either one of you, but I am taking your input very seriously, because it'll be two different, very interesting perspectives. And one thing I've known my entire life is that nobody sees the world the same way I do. I need other people's views of the world in order to even get outside of my own box. You know what I mean?
So absolutely.
It's going to be necessary and essential, I think, in making this whole thing work. And, you know, this isn't about complaints either or sharing suffering, because some people might say, okay, what are you going to do, dump a bunch of that stuff on us? No, I don't intend to do that.
No, it's part of the human story. Yeah. I mean, pain, you know?
Well, yeah, absolutely. But it's not all about the pain. You know, it's about it's about a lot of things that go on. And in fact, I was almost childish and just high school level as this might seem. I was going back over the Divine Comedy a bit, you know, and thinking about that, because again, the title is going to be Halfway to Hell. That is a necessary title.
That's awesome.
And you know, two things stand out to me that Dante wrote. Very short. Extremely short quotes. Everybody, you know, who's 13 quotes Dante, I know, if they're, you know, pseudo-intellectual. But so I'm going to go with the with the very trite quoting of Dante here to get at the philosophy. But understand, I'm not here to complain or to cry about these things. It's just that I have a certain view of this, and I think it will be an interesting journey if anybody chooses to take it along with us here. And you guys have volunteered to go along on the journey, but the listeners will be able to do the same. Two quotes that I have, just to give you the philosophical sort of ethos behind this. They are as follows. First of all, Dante at one point said, "The path to paradise begins in hell." And also another thing he wrote was, "Do not be afraid. Our fate cannot be taken from us. It is a gift." Now, I know that those are very simple quotes, but these are at the heart of why it is I choose to live and breathe. Both of these things. And so I believe that there is a path, no matter what your beginnings are, to exist and contribute and actually end up on the positive side of the equation. But also, I believe that the pains and the suffering and whatever else it is you encounter or endure, no matter who you are, where you are, the truth is that these are the building blocks of what will be at the center of your being. That a lot is gained, almost like the Buddhist philosophy about, you know, what is... you know, many Buddhist philosophies. I'm not going to start quoting that. But again, even in Christian circles, one could say that that what it is you endure does build who you are, and the choices that you make are obviously essential about where it is you may end up eventually. You know, in the afterlife, mostly they preach to you about that, and that is one of those things they do. And I'm not going all religiosity tonight. I'm just saying that these are at the core of most people's beliefs, whether they say them out loud or not. So Certainly, as a child, I contemplated the concept of hell a great deal, hoping that, and most people do, regardless of their religious affiliation.
Yeah.
Most people do at some point in their lives contemplate that a lot, because hell in and of itself exists outside of the parameters of a religious dogma. It's almost like a generally accepted thing. I mean, people have a list of individuals that they think might belong there. People have, you know, maybe a list of categories of individuals that they think automatically, if there is a hell, they should be there, whether they believe in it or not.
Or even a state of mind.
There's a judgmental element here, which ultimately turns inward. Most people turn it outward, but ultimately we wind up judging ourselves and what we are deserving of as far as our punishment, our karma, what should come back to us, things like that. And I may have a slightly warped view of this personally, but frankly, I think most of the time, you know, the concept that people hold up of justice and you always get your just desserts, that's not entirely true. But you also at all times have free will, and I believe in that. I don't necessarily know I have free will, because if I didn't, I probably would not know it. But But I believe that we all have free will, and that is an important element of what's going to be discussed in the audiobooks. So anyways, all of that having been said, now that we're down to, let's see, how much time do we have left? About 20 more minutes. I want to turn it over to Bob for a minute, see what is on his mind just currently, and give you about 10 minutes to speak and throw something on the table here before we get done with this two-hour discussion, which didn't really accomplish a lot, but gives people an idea that...
Yeah, I'm sorry about that again.
No, it's not your fault, Chris. It's really more me wandering around and talking too much and filling dead air as opposed to focusing on, listen, we're going to have these audiobooks come out, and they're going to be special things that you're going to have to purchase or support as they go, and that's how you're going to have access to them. We're going to give away the introductory section or introduction for free, but after that, you're going to have to buy these as they go. And it may be a point of, you know, you support up to, say, $20 a month. Maybe you get two audiobooks a month out of that. Something like that, which I can either deliver to your email, or maybe I'll come up with another delivery system. But more details on that when the introduction is released. I just want to warm people up to the idea that we're going to finally put this thing out that I've been talking about for a while. A couple of people I know are interested in it. But Halfway to Hell will become a reality, with the help of Chris Graves and Bob Wilson. And who knows who else might be added to the mix later. We'll see. But the majority of it is going to be me telling a story, and not like I am on air right now, but, again, with the attitude and atmosphere of an audiobook. That's the way it'll go. So it'll be an audiobook before it's a book. Why the hell not? Anyways, Bob, what is generally on your mind? We don't have to discuss the project anymore, and... Please don't quote The Godfather anymore. I'm good on that today. The Swedish guy quoting The Godfather, I'm good. Let's move forward.
Not even one more.
Yeah. Maybe at the end, all right?
At the end. I was thinking, you know, about something Bob Dylan said. He said, paraphrasing him, you know, there's so much misery in the world that if you concentrated on all, you know, concentrated on it all the time, you know, you'd lose your mind. There's only so much that you can affect and so much that you can do. Mm-hmm. And then... it was funny when Carl De Niro was on. He was the guy who was did the show with the Son of Sam murders, and he had been shot. And part of the time he was talking, you know, he's involved in this case. It's a huge case. You know, it's a case that's going to be remembered the way Jack the Ripper was remembered. You know, it's not going away. It's going to be in history books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the poor guy has a plate in his head because he was shot in the head. And at one point in the show, he said, well, it's not about me whining. And, you know, as he was talking, I was processing that, pardon the pun with that case, but processing that. And he was saying, you know, it's. I don't mean to whine or something. I was like, buddy, you know, I'm thinking you got shot in the head. You know, it's like you have a plate in your head. You're lucky to be alive. You don't have to apologize for going through that. But, you know, what makes like a good biography? And usually it's that someone is honest about what it is that they're going through and the things that they see, and they're making an attempt to understand it and take what they see in life and apply to it and try to find redemption, you know, and try to find answers and try to work through it, become a better person, a more loving person. And some of the things that happen also, you know, some things are more entertaining than the others, you know, and with this guy telling his story, it's enough what he went through to justify telling it. But, you know, when when you boil it down, you know, his case could also be a movie because the Son of Sam stuff was involved. So it's just funny when people talk about their pain, and sometimes people say, you know, well, someone else's pain is greater, but, you know, everybody's pain matters. And I think what you expressed, you had so many different subdivisions in there, like, you know, when you were born addicted and, you know, what your dad went through and losing your dad and, you know, having that viewpoint of the streets and having a look inside, you know, mafia types and stuff like and such. And, you know, trying to find a mate and someone that you gelled with, someone that you could be with, you know, and that person hopefully would help each other to become whole and help each other to work through the things that you've gone through and see things in life that are, you know, matter to the two of you. And, you know, that also you were involved in the world of music and you saw that and being a bodyguard and, you know, the whole JFK thing, you know, probably changed the events that we all live through day by day. Like that was, you know, one of the biggest events, I think, to turn things, you know, in our time. And you guys probably agree with that one. And, you know, just when you express it yourself, like, you know, you're a confident guy and you know your stuff, but it's just, you know, there's no reason, your story is strong enough that you don't have to say, you know, gee, is it worth telling? I mean, you know, it is worth telling and your insights into it are worth listening to. So, you know, which is why people tune into the radio network. So, you know, and this is even a more concentrated chance for you to, you know, those things might come out in bits and pieces as you're doing a show. Someone else comes on and they talk about politics. Someone else comes on, they talk about war. Someone else comes on, they talk about JFK. Like all those things that you experienced affect your point of view on it. So like this is an opportunity for you to go back and not just show one piece of, you know, how those things affect you and how you enter, you know, how you work through and deal with people who come on and talk about these things. So it's an opportunity to show what created the person who's like doing the radio show. So I think it's definitely interesting and you can hash out in more detail the things that you might only talk about in an overview. So in that, I think that it is important. And when you boil it down, you know, other people listen to it. Why do you want to listen to it? Sometimes it's exciting to hear what someone else went through. You want to see into a world you haven't really experienced, which is probably why most people, you know, watch mafia movies and Martin Scorsese and Joe Pesci and things like that. But, you know, for you talking about the things that you experienced and that you went through with each of those things, it is a compelling autobiography. And when you tell it in spoken word, you know, and you're, you know, and on a podcast, obviously it's verbal, it's words, you know, and in this, it's not just on the written page, like the expression of what you're feeling. You know, as you speak, people can sort of follow your emotional level as you're telling it, what things you're struggling with, which things come back to you in fear or which things come back to you in with good memories. Like all that comes through the raconteur. And I think that, you know, what is history? History is a recounting of, you know, they say it's usually told by the winners for societies. But in this case, you know, the individual is telling a story mixed into all this. So I think that when you do that and you boil it down in a way where you're trying to reach out to other people and bond with them through what you're saying and make a connection, even with sometimes with people you would never meet, I think that's a very powerful thing and why we're all attracted day by day, you know, to be either speaking on the shows or having people on or writing something. That's what it boils down to, and that's what your gift is. So I think this is a real chance to, you know, pull the dross out and, you know, boil the gold and as an alchemist or something, you know.
No, I understand. And I'll tell you one of the I'll tell you one of the stories that I believe will be contained in here that'll be, you know, there's going to be a lot of ways to look at this as we present it. One of the stories I think people are not going to expect is thematic, and that is that you know, having to relearn and unlearn things constantly in life is something that that'll become apparent. And one of the most apparent storylines that I don't think people will realize will be in there is that, you know, at a certain point I started out life, and yeah, it seems like it's rough, but to me it was normal. And quite honestly, you know, my father taught me how to love a bit, but then I kind of unlearned that. And didn't know how to love people. I understood the transactional nature of affection, of people saying they loved somebody. I understood that part of it, but I had to be retaught how to actually love somebody. And that story will be contained in there too. How that came about. And how, you know, it seems like there are people in society on occasion that, for one reason or another, you might judge and think that they're incapable of empathy or they're incapable of a great many things. Well, there could be reasons for that, and it could be that they were not taught. And how I was taught, you know, it's not the typical teacher-student situation. And when you guys read through the rough draft there, you'll see something that begins where I start talking about, actually I titled the chapter 33 Lovers and 7 Mothers. And it was the women in my life who gave me back my humanity, pretty much. So I think that'll be an interesting story by itself. You'll be able to parse out different things here and take different lessons from it. And ultimately, yeah, it is about some level of redemption that maybe isn't even altogether clear and isn't, you know, triumphant and obvious to the rest of the world. But there is a way to survive and thrive no matter who you are, where you are. So it's just, I think it'll be interesting in that way. And I kind of look forward to getting into that stuff with you guys, because I think you'll see a weird side of me that I don't often easily share. But I'm gonna lay this all, this stuff all bare as best I can. As I said, the only two things I'm not gonna do is put somebody else's freedom in jeopardy, and that's about it. Other than that, gonna lay out the good, the bad, the ugly, so to speak. And some people might focus on the ugly, but you know, I can't help what it is they take away from it. I'm just going to lay it all out, and I hope you guys have the patience and fortitude to get through the weirdness of the stories. And usually I'm not about focusing on myself. I actually think the story is more important than me, and could be instructive to many people on many levels. So that's what I'm after. I would rather that somebody take something from it and, you know, does not surrender, does not give up, regardless of who they are and what they have in their hands at the moment. That's really all I'm looking for out of this. And it would be nice if people support it. So I'm going to give you guys a way to do that as we go forward. Not you guys on the call, but you guys listening. I'm going to give you guys a way to do that so that you can, consume said media as it's being produced. And we'll at least get it. You know, we're going to do them every week for a bit, but we'll get a couple of them out per month. Just to give us time in case there's any, you know, problems where we can't get together on a Monday, this kind of thing. And I'm not even sure how many of them there are going to be. We're going to just go through the story, and I'm going to try and tell you how I got from 0 to 50, basically. Again, editing out some of the stuff that is probably, you know, repetitive or... And I'm going to take guidance from these two guys, because I think that they will both... with thoughtfulness assist me in this way and assist you guys as listeners. And like I said, perhaps we'll bring in other people too as this evolves. We'll see what happens. But, you know, if I remain just with Chris Graves and with Bob Wilson to do this project, first of all, I want to thank you guys in advance for even, indulging this with me, because there's no guarantee that... any of us is going to gain anything out of this. Matter of fact, the only guarantee is we're going to use up some time and we're going to create something. That's the only guarantees I've got here. As for what it does, what it'll, what fruit it'll bear, I have no idea. I have no idea how much people will support it or not. I have no idea if it'll become something, you know, big or if it'll just fizzle. I have no idea. We're going into this to just create it as it happens, and organically, it's going to do what it's going to do. Looking forward to it. And Bob, I appreciate your thoughts. Now I want to just get any other thoughts from Chris, and they don't have to be about the project. And then obviously I'll let Bob do his Godfather shtick at the end too. But, because I promised, and I usually keep my word. Chris,
yeah.
any other thoughts you have? I mean, is there current events or anything? I mean, whatever it is you want to say, brother. I mean, just go ahead and take 10 minutes or so to yourself and knock it out, whatever it is that's on your mind.
Yeah, no, what's on my mind, I don't think anyone's going to want to hear. I appreciated what Bob was saying there. And, you know, look forward to getting to work on this and, you know, trying to help you save your network, you know. And, yeah, I mean, current events, I mean, the world's going to hell, literally, you know. It gets harder and harder every day, you know, just being inundated with all this nonsense that we are, you know. Kind of the idea of the whole conspiracy research thing is to, you know, is to try to find things to show, you know, the public that will listen, you know, how the real history actually works and not what, you know, what the quote-unquote quarter historians, you know, have to say about, you know, the way things went down in our past, you know, so maybe people can really, you know, learn from the real history and make sure none of this corruption continues. I mean, as hard as that might seem, you know, because it feels like it's an uphill battle with all this stuff, you know, and it just seems to get worse and worse, but maybe, you know, the worse it gets, maybe it will actually, you know, will come out the other end, you know, better people in the end, if we can do something about those that, you know, don't have our best interests in mind, if we could somehow, you know, eradicate these people, you know, get them out of the positions that they're in, the stranglehold that they have on this country and this world, you know, for whether or not you have children. I don't have any children. I would love to have children, but whether you have kids or not, it shouldn't really matter. Just the fact to preserve the species, you know, on this planet, you know. I don't know if that's a little too deep for right now, but, you know, that's kind of where my mind is at the moment, you know.
No, absolutely. Look, I share your sentiment. Obviously, that's part of the mission statement here. You know, at the network is to do something different because what has been done so far has not served everyone. I think that we should all take control of our own personal destinies as best we can. Obviously, a lot of the decisions and parameters that are set have nothing to do with our desires, do they? But at all times, we do have efforts we can make. And at every moment of every day, you have the opportunity for a new decision to change the direction of things, at least in your immediate vicinity. And if we all create a bubble where we have a bit of control and had mutual interests in mind, right, here's the odd, sort of strangely, what do we call that, optimistic view of what it is. We could change the circumstance at any moment if we could collectively make a decision. And that is why it is always so useful to those that are the powers that should not be to keep us at each other's throats most of the time. Because exactly. We'll never be able to have the energy or time to turn our attentions to them.
Yep.
And that is what is extremely important in what it is you're saying. And look, man, I know you're not feeling super energetic today, and that's cool. I understand.
No,
that's...
I was earlier. It's just this stupid laptop situation, you know.
Yeah.
I had someone listening that, you know, was listening, and they turned it off at a crucial moment, I felt. And I'm one of those people that something just sticks in their head. It's hard to let go, you know. I'm an emotional being, whether I like it or not, which I don't really like. But, I mean, that's a part of, you know, when we're talking about the creating art thing. I mean, a lot of artists, you know, they have their quirks and everything, you know.
No, I totally, listen, I'm a lot more sensitive than a lot of people think I am, okay? but I try to...
You're human. It just shows that you're human, you know?
Well, I try to operate without showing that sensitivity. I still have that very arcane kind of idea about, you know, shut up and do what you got to do. This is for me, not for you or anybody else. You know, your standards are yours. I'm just saying that most of the time I have that kind of feeling. I absolutely hate it when... when I find myself complaining or whining about anything.
Oh, believe me. Oh, don't take any of this as me complaining. Like, it's my own fault.
Like, no. I'm not turning that on you. I'm just saying that it's like it's just one of those things that I don't usually accept from myself. Is Sorry, there was an early lesson that I've never been able to let go of, which is, you know, do not expose weakness if you can avoid it, because it will always be used against you. And that is something that I've never been able to get out of my head, even if I'm in a circumstance where it would probably be a good thing to show vulnerability. Maybe I don't always do that.
I think between the two of us, if we split the difference, we're golden.
maybe. But then again, you know, you're going to learn some interesting things here in this storytelling. Maybe you won't think that.
I look forward to it.
You know, and speaking of children, tomorrow, which is when this podcast will be released, my oldest daughter, that'll be her birthday. And so happy birthday, Katie. And again, somebody else that might have not realized they changed my life when they came into existence, but she certainly did. There's that part of the story, too. And recently, she, just stupid little anecdote here, recently she sent me a dad mug.
That had to make you feel pretty good, though.
Well,
that's not stupid.
You know, she was born in 1999, and I didn't have a good relationship with her mother and all that, and there's a whole story there, and that's partially hers to tell, not mine. But the thing is that 20-something years later, right, we're about to hit 23 here. She'll be 23 shortly, yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, 20-something years later, that's the first dad mug I ever got. And I've got three kids.
I bet she's proud of her father. So there you go.
Well, you know, she wrote me a heartfelt note that I don't think it's my business to share on air, but I was really surprised and just about brought to tears over what she wrote. And, wow. Yeah, I would say that even though she doesn't fully understand me, she is very proud and very much understands part of who I am and who I want her to be. So we have reestablished a relationship in the past couple of years, which we did not have for a while. That was all circumstantial stuff, and I really just am grateful to have lived long enough for that to have happened.
Me too. I'm glad.
You know, but you brought up kids, and you know, they are a mixed bag, and at a certain point they are not in your control. I promise you that much, no matter what anybody says. But outside of that,
that's all right though. You know
I'm very very happy, and you know, I don't necessarily understand all three of my kids, but I do love them. There is no condition on that, and that's the way it has been and always shall be. So I just wanted to say that before we're done and kind of give you guys each a final word here, because we started a few minutes late. So let's close it out with whatever the final thoughts are here. Bob, you don't have to talk about the project anymore. I appreciate it. You can do your Godfather stick if you like. You could promote your show a little bit, whatever it is you want to do. Floor is yours for a couple of minutes, Bob.
Okie dokie. Well, we got some good shows coming up on July 3rd. Scott Enyart, who is a few feet away from Robert Kennedy when he was killed taking pictures of him, is going to be on with JFK researcher, author Joseph McBride is going to say help me conduct that interview, but Joseph doesn't really need help. He's going to come on and do that one with me, so that's a show that we're looking forward to. And then if you're interested in the UFO phenomenon, Norio Hayakawa is going to come on this Sunday. He's got a different take on all that, so I'm looking forward to that. And Marshall Terrell will come on and talk some rock and roll. So we got some good shows coming up. And, you know, before we close out, I just wanted to say that, you know, from the time of Christopher Columbus up through the time of Enrico Fermi, right up until the present day, Italian-Americans have been pioneers in building and defending our great nation. They're the salt of the earth, and they're one of the backbones of this country. That's Senator Geary from Godfather 2. There you go.
Yeah, I knew what that was. There you go. You know, another thing, too, just to put another bee in your bonnet, Bob. You know, Larry Hancock is actively working with guys about the recent disclosures on UFOs, too. And I'm not sure if that conference took place yet that I promoted with him a couple of weeks ago, but he's actively involved in that and has written that book Unidentified, which is about the national security state reaction to it. And it's a different sort of perspective. So I don't know, you might want to, you do have access to Larry Hancock, so that might be something else if you want to go more into the UFO stuff from a slightly different angle. Which, at first, the UFO community didn't exactly receive Larry's book very well, and neither did the JFK community, so always feel it necessary to mention Larry when UFOs come up in discussion, because his work is extremely valuable when it comes to the behaviors of the national security state from many different angles, and he's written a lot of books about it, not the least of which is related to the Kennedy assassination, but he's gone all over the map, everything from creating chaos to shadow warfare, to a surprise attack. And again, I'll state for listeners, there's no author with more books on my shelf than Larry Hancock. So that's how valuable I think his writing is. So anyways, just wanted to point that out and provide it to you as an option, Bob, in the future. But Chris,
well, I'm glad to have Larry Hancock on. I had wanted to interview him for like 20 years and I couldn't get in touch with him. He obviously either was pulling his blind shut or, locking the mailbox. But I was glad that you put us in touch and I was able to talk to him about Richard Case Nagel and also Dick Russell. So those were two of my favorite shows. So I'd love to talk to him about that sometime.
Yeah, I mean, Larry's got a lot to offer and he's on every other week on Thursdays. I know you don't know that, Bob, because you don't listen to my show. But the thing is that...
it's an unfair summary of my listening practices, ladies and gentlemen. Often I'm in the chat room, which is ignored by our esteemed host, and I'm commenting and I'm listening to the show and it's as if he doesn't know we're there, but we are supporting his efforts. We're well behind everything he does, and we do listen far more than he would be telling you at this moment.
Mm. By the way, one of the chatters, because I do actually watch the chat room, and I do note when Bob's in there, but often I mention shows to him, and he goes, he's not aware of them. And I go, well, I thought you would have been interested in that topic. But anyway, one of the chatters has mentioned, me too, Chuck. I have many Larry Hancock books on my shelf, too. So that's our friend Jimmy James, actually, mentioning that in the chat room. And if you don't know Jimmy James, then you definitely haven't been listening to my show or anybody else's show on the network, because he's called them all. I think Jimmy James has been on Bob's show on the rare call-in occasion, wasn't he?
Yes, he has. The king of the pregnant pause. He's an entity unto himself and a force of nature, and we always love it when he participates.
Absolutely. And in the future, I do want to do a deadpan battle between Bob and Jimmy James and see which one of them succeeds.
Stephen Wright.
Listen, if I could book Stephen Wright, I would. That guy would be hilarious. I would love to put the three of you on
Williams.
Air. The three of you on air would be hilarious. If you don't know who Stephen Wright is, I mean, that's the guy who said, I put spot remover on my dog and then he disappeared. You know, this guy.
Radio disc jockey and Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, true. Played a psychiatrist in something. I keep forgetting what it was. But anyway, doesn't matter. I think it was in Natural Born Killers he plays a psychiatrist, like in the news rushes. But anyway, that is all another aside. And there you go. That brings us to final words from Chris Graves, who at all times is ADD, dominates the conversation. See that? You just heard it on air. We just went to another direction and about almost went off-roading, right? Anyway,
blue car.
I love this guy. Chris, any final thoughts before we close out the show tonight? Looking forward to doing this project with you, obviously, and we'll hear more about it next week because we are going to release the introduction, which I haven't even done with these guys yet, but we're going to record it next Monday at this time. So the Ocelli Effect will not be live on Mondays for a little while and going to be occupied doing the audiobooks. So, Chris, any final thoughts?
Yeah, Chuck, you're an inspiration, whether you know it or not. I think you do know it. And Bob Wilson, he's a very funny fellow. And just remember, flush once for the bulk, twice for the remainder. And that's it.
See what I mean? It's like somebody took Pulp Fiction and just randomly took scissors to it and put it back together again. Yeah, it... It's great. I love this. So, look, I'm busting balls on these guys, but they're both uniquely psychologically set up to make this a very different project, and I hope that the listeners participate in it. And it is literally a vehicle to try and help support the network, because network support has fallen off a great deal. And going to make some changes, see what how that goes, see what happens. Who knows? You know, I hope I can sustain it, and I hope that this project allows me to provide something of value to you guys to encourage that. And who knows where it'll go from there. Now, Chris knows a little something about writing a screenplay. Who knows? Maybe he'll take some of this and create something out of it. Or maybe he'll take his own story. He'll be inspired to do that. I hope that, you know, something comes of this. Maybe Bob, when the project is running, will actually have me on his show, not just to add an addendum to his questions, which I got to tell you is always a weird position. Where Bob's got like a Beatles guy on, he goes, and by the way, our producer loves Black Sabbath. Chuck, go. And I go, oh, crap.
One of my favorites running segments.
It's you don't, you guys don't know
major,
this.
Major surgery today, I think. I hope he's okay.
My prayers are with Ozzy, actually. I do hope that he's all right. Sharon said he had major surgery or had major surgery scheduled. But we do not know all the details. Last I looked at the news feed, but Ozzy's getting up there. He's like 73, I think, and surprised all the original members of Black Sabbath are still alive. But anyway, yeah. Bob does this thing where he does that, and then I go, well, you know, and I've always got to, like, on my feet sort of come up with a way to introduce myself into the questioning and hope that Bob didn't hit all the beats that I would have had in my mind to begin with. Maybe I'll actually have an extended conversation on Bob's show once we get the book rolling. You know, if he will include me along with the, you know, likes of some of his guests like Ivor Davis, who has been repeated on there and was on this very recent show, which I only posted today.
I didn't know you were available and so willing to do a whole show, Chuck. I'd be more than honored to have you on from start to finish. This is an open invitation on the air before our listeners to call you in whenever you're ready, and you name the date, and we'll bring you on the show.
Well, in support of what it is we're going to do, maybe we'll schedule something there once a few chapters are out there, because I think some of the people interested in listening to your show are not necessarily interested in listening to my show, but might be interested in the book. I can tell that from the demographics. But Ivor Davis and Jude Sutherland Kessler was on this past week, and they were talking all kinds of Beatles stuff, and I was more than happy to stay the hell out of that. Also, spoiler, Bob did a whole thing there where, he's doing his Bob Dylan impression, and I'll leave that to the judgment of the listeners.
I was asked to do that. I didn't volunteer that or force it upon anyone. Ivor asked me to do it, and when an English gentleman asks you to do your Bob Dylan impersonation, you have to do it or you would be insulting him. That's a big insult in the British Isles.
I totally understand. It's so interesting, though, to listen to Ivor because, you know, I cannot stand listening to Richard Quest on cable news, but they have a similar cadence. It's just that I don't hate Ivor. I can't stand Richard Quest because the guy, first of all, he has that very sort of intentional, you know, English thing, and Ivor does that, too. But Richard Quest sounds constipated every time he speaks. I can't handle listening
to
that.
Ivor is lovable, but you know, on June 26th, Ivor is coming on, and he's bringing on Diane Lake, who is a member of the Manson family who escaped and made good in her life. Mm-hmm. So Ivor is actually coming back. I bet on that one you'd like to be a fly on the wall and add some commentary in that one.
Well, I might, but then again, I also don't like interrupting your flow, which is different than mine.
I usually peter out at about 50 minutes, and that's when I, like, the manager slaps his right hand and goes to the bullpen, and you come in, and the, you know, like Mariano Rivera entered the Sandman.
A blue car.
There you go. Well, you know, I'd rather think of John Franco or Jeff Reardon because not a Yankees fan.
They're great ones, too.
But I got you. I understand. and... Anyways, with all that having been said, I really hope that you guys listening out there get into what it is we're going to produce. I do think it'll be, if nothing else, it will be unique. And, you know, if you are a fan of the show and are interested in the rather curiously sort of twisted mindset of the host, you'll definitely get some insights into that. Maybe start to understand some of my strange behaviors and statements that... again, as Bob has said, I've glossed over on occasion and mentioned, but maybe elaborating on them will be interesting and instructive one way or another. Plus, I got a feeling that more things are going to come out of this, and I don't know if they'll be beneficial for me directly or for somebody else, but I have this gut feeling that Halfway to Hell as a project, even though it sounds a little rough, is going to be beneficial to people that participate in it and consume it as media one way or another. So hopefully that is the goal. I definitely don't want to just give horror stories here, although there may be some in there. So anyway, the Ocelli Effect is done for tonight. I want to thank Chris Graves and Bob Wilson for, first of all, indulging me for 2 hours today, but for volunteering, for signing up, for listening to me talk again for many, many hours coming up. And you guys will all be able to get a hold of that through the audiobook that's going to be developed in a series that will only be available to people directly supporting it. So that's what's going to happen on Mondays from now on. And hey, listen to the network the rest of the week, because there might be some other changes coming up as well. All right? And we'll see you maybe tomorrow night. I don't know. Tuesday? Let's see if I want to do that, because Christy Aphrodite's been on lately, and I don't want to miss her, but then again, I feel like taking a night off, so guess we'll see tomorrow what we see tomorrow. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.